This is...
That's so dumb!
Felger.
Oh, you idiot!
And Mass.
Holy crap!
Felger and Mass.
I hate that.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
From the Town Fair Tire Studio, Felger and Mass, 98.5 of Sports Hub, simulcast NBC Sports Boston. And again, for the final time this week, it is Jim Murray, Adam Jones at Felger and Mass, and Matt McCarthy alongside as well. And it being 4 o'clock on an agenda-free Friday, brought to you by Planet Fitness, the world judges they don't, planetfitness.com, means we are also joined by the one, the only, Christopher L. Gasper of the Boston Globe, and one half of the award-winning Saturday afternoon show, Gasper and Murray, here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Hey, Chris, hi.
Hey, good to see you guys. You know, a lot of times when you're out, Jones fills in.
So that's right.
It really is a Gasper and Murray vibe here.
Apologies for the drop in ratings for that, but
no, Jones is a great host. You guys have been great this week.
Thank you. One week ago, in the pages of the Boston Globe, you wrote, "If the Patriots don't beat the Steelers, we'll know there's something really wrong."
Yes.
You discussed this last Friday when Felger and Mass were here. We did it on our show on Saturday. I didn't feel good about the Patriots' chances going into that game, more about the Patriots than the Steelers. And the Steelers tried to do everything that they could to steal it up and give that game away. But the Patriots, well, they were just dumber. And the offense scores 10 points for the third time on the road this year. Is it all over, Chris? Your thoughts and fallout on this game from last Sunday? We'll start there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the dynasty's over, but I think when you look at this season, this being a Super Bowl winning team, it doesn't feel like it, does it?
No.
I mean, a normal Patriots team takes that win happily and easily from the Steelers in the fourth quarter, breaks their hearts once again. I mean, I was at the game. I feel like the people down there almost, you know, they were happy they won, but they almost couldn't believe it. You know, the way you put it, Steeler it up. They're like, man, we Steelered it up, and we actually still beat these guys. It's awesome. But I think when you look at it, just the way that they played in that game offensively, the inability to convert in the red zone, defensively, obviously you didn't give up a lot of points, but you gave up a ton of rushing yards. You let Pittsburgh stay on the field. I'm still a little baffled as to why Bill decided to take all three timeouts into the locker room at halftime. If I'm thinking about it strategically, it almost seems like he was less concerned about his guys being able to score and more concerned about if we leave any time here, Pittsburgh's going to march down and score on us. And to me, that's sort of emblematic of this team and this season, that instead of having the confidence to believe in yourself and focus on what you need to do, you're worried about trying to prevent the opponent from doing something because you don't really feel like you can dictate these games and control these games the way you have in the past.
Why do they stink on the road, Patriots?
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I don't. It's baffling to me, especially with the defense. I mean, I was a big defender of this defense. I thought they were going to be better than last year's defense. And the Green Bay game, the Minnesota game, I was like, there it is. There it is. And then they go back out on the road. You know, the shame of the Miami game, obviously, the way that game ended, we're all going to remember that. But really, letting them hang around in the first half of that game, it's, you know, 27-21 at the half, your offense is rolling. And, you know, it's like in baseball, right? Shutdown inning. You score, you just put 4 or 5 runs on the board. You want to go out there and have a shutdown inning. You don't want to let the other team back in the game. Every single time against Miami, the Patriots defense let Miami back in the game. Brady goes out there, puts some points on the board. Okay, you can have those points back. Here's Brandon Bolden, you know, out there looking like Barry Sanders. So it's very strange. I mean, the only thing I could say, Jones, to you would be that it's two completely different defenses on the road. It just is. The secondary
was actually pretty good last week.
They were.
It's just, again, like that running defense is a sieve.
Well, that's part of that strategic, though. I mean, they have to make a sacrifice. To put more speed and athleticism on the field, they have to get smaller. And so you see 6 defensive backs and sometimes 7 defensive backs, and that's easier to run against. And with their, you know, issues at linebacker and the fact that, you know, I know Bedard loves Lawrence Guy, and he's had a good year, but he can't do it alone. And he's certainly not, you know, we're not talking about like Gilbert Brown and his glory days in terms of someone who's going to single-handedly stop the run or, you know, somebody else, Ted Washington. We're not talking about that type of Vince Wilfork, that type of player. Guy's solid. You're asking a lot out of him and Malcolm Brown when you have 6, 7 DBs in the game and you say, okay, let's not get gashed in the run game.
You, like me, are a card-carrying Tom Brady Bobo and defender.
This is true.
But he has been mostly
a shell of himself, really, for the last six quarters. He was great in that first half of Miami, and then he turned into a pumpkin. And there's some speculative reporting from Mike Giardi of NFL Network and also Jeff Howe of The Athletic saying that they think it's his knee, maybe an MCL tear, sprain, something like that. Is this the reason you see him bailing out of throws and for his poor play overall?
I definitely think it's a factor in it. There's no question about it. I mean, he doesn't seem to be striding the right way. It would make a lot of sense. And the most irritating thing to me about it is that, well, how did he hurt this knee? You know, we don't really know, but we do know that
stupid pass
that
in Tennessee.
Stupid double pass in Tennessee. He got up and was sort of favoring the knee, and that was an issue. Maybe he was hurt before then, and I'm unduly putting blame on Belichick and Josh McDaniels, but I've gone back and watched that play, and it seems like when he starts to stumble, it's not just like I'm stumbling.
There's a still that shows that left leg going at an angle that it completely shouldn't.
Well, and even if he was already dinged up, well, then what are you running passes to him
exactly.
for if he's dinged up?
Yeah, Jones, I love the way you think.
Thank you. Yes, go down to the depths of darkness.
That makes it even worse. You're right, Jones.
Good.
You're right.
Yep.
Yes, yeah. I think Jones is right. He was hurt before that.
They ran it anyway. Yeah, even worse. Even stupid.
They ran it anyway. They said, forget, we have no offense. We're all smoke and mirrors. Yeah, yeah, the 41-year-old quarterback has an MCL strain. Yeah, whatever. Double pass.
Thoughts on the Josh Gordon situation?
Well, it's sad. You know, first of all, I feel badly for him. I do, and I hope he is able to get the help that he needs and eventually tackle these demons. But, you know, I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. Back when they brought this guy in and everybody was doing touchdown dances over the fact they only got him for a fifth-round pick, you know, I said, this is the worst-case scenario. You get him, he's really good, and he was really good, and then two games before the end of the season, he failed another drug test? He's off the team. He's out of the league.
They became too reliant
on him. That's what I'm saying. And that's the word. It almost would have been better if he came in here and played like Joey Galloway. Because then you're like, oh, we're going to use this guy a little bit, but not really.
Or maybe they make a move at the deadline.
Exactly. Maybe they make a move at the deadline. But he comes in. He plays well. You feel like you filled the hole. You don't feel a sense of urgency to add another guy at the deadline. So you don't. And now we get to the end of the year, and he can't play in any of the games that really matter. You know, he's not going to play in any of the postseason games. Those are the ones that really matter for you. And that's why I said from the beginning on this, you're mischaracterizing this if you're saying it's a low-risk move. It's a high-risk move. It's a cost move, and there's a difference. And the reason it was a low-cost move for a player of his caliber was because of the issues he'd had in the past with substance abuse and mental health. That's why you got him at such a low cost, but it was never risk. It was always high risk. And it's unfortunate. I feel for him. But to be honest, completely honest, this was the most predictable of the endings for how things were going to go with Josh Gordon and the Patriots. And to me, it just speaks to the level of desperation Belichick had at that position that they rolled the dice anyway because they had no choice and they had no better options. There was such a huge hole in this roster that they said, let's just roll the dice and let's see if we can walk that tightrope with this guy and get him through the season and through the playoffs. And they weren't able to do it.
There's been a lot of talk or reporting anyway. I know Bert had a report, Rap Sheet had a report that Gordon's known for a long time that this is a possibility, right? Weeks, maybe even months. Do you think it's possible the team knew?
Maybe. I mean, maybe they did. But if they knew, to your point about the trade deadline,
Why wouldn't they be more aggressive?
Why wouldn't you be more aggressive and get another guy?
Maybe they didn't know exactly when it would drop. Maybe they thought there was a chance it would drop in the offseason.
But if you also go back to that, it sounded like they were. But then they kind of, you know, didn't want to end up covering the money end of Demaryius Thomas. It sounded like they were in on him. But then on the financial aspect, they pushed away from the table. That was one of the things I thought of mid-show yesterday. It brings back, you know, their inactivity. You could look back at their inactivity at the trade deadline, and it annoyed me again because I felt like they should have done something. They were in on wide receivers at that time, and around that time was when they were heading into, or was around that same week of the Bills game where this first thing popped up with Josh Gordon on this team where he was late, and it sounded like he was going to be a scratch for that game against Buffalo on Monday night, and he wasn't. And then that story got squashed, and it was fake news, but it wasn't. So why were they doing it then? Did they know that something like this was imminent? They should have.
Well, they might have known. I mean, they might have known it was a possibility.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, different from knowing it's a certainty, right? And so if it's a certainty, then don't you have to sort of pony up whatever you have to pony up for Golden Tate or Demaryius Thomas or whoever it is?
And those guys went for short picks. Like, what, Tate was a fourth, right? And then
Tate was a third.
Either way.
Yeah.
The mid-round pick, yeah.
Well, they don't have a third. Well, they do. They will. They do have thirds. But their third, their own third, they used on Danny Shelton.
Oh, that worked.
That was good. That's a good trade, at least. At least that was a good return.
Three straight weeks of being a healthy scratch. That's real good. Yeah. So my bigger thing was, and I'm with you, like, hey, you hope the best for Josh Gordon.
Yeah,
he gets
absolutely.
His life in order. He'll probably never play in the league again, but he's run out of chances. My bigger takeaway with this story, Chris, was it's a further indictment on this team this year and how many mistakes that they've made in terms of personnel, trading away picks for players they don't end up using, like Coney Ealy last year, like Danny Shelton this year. And it just feels like it's a lost season. It does. You know, maybe the dynasty isn't over per se.
Yeah, I don't think it's over. I'm telling you right now, I think Brady's going to have a monster year next year.
But for this year, it's a lost year, and this is just further proof of it.
Yeah, it does. It does kind of feel that way. It does feel that way, that it's just, you know, I've said before, this has sort of like a 2006, 2013 feel. Yeah, I'm downgrading it to 2005, 2009 type of feel, where it's just like, it's just not, it just doesn't feel like it's going to happen for him. Now, look, maybe something happens, you know, they get in the postseason, they get a very favorable draw. It could work out. In some ways, them being the three seed could work to their advantage, and I don't want to get in all these playoff permutations, but if you have, say, Pittsburgh and, say, Kansas City have to play each other, 4-5.
An upset could happen.
Yeah, so then one of those teams is knocked out, right?
Yeah.
And that certainly helps you in some regard. So one of those teams is automatically out of there, and, you know, the way it sort of breaks down, you know, you're playing the six, so you beat them, so then the 4-5 winner, now they go play the one seed. Maybe that's the Chargers. Maybe they beat them. And all of a sudden you look up and all you have to do is beat the Texans on the road and you host the AFC title game.
See, this is why you're my better half on Saturday. You're optimistic. Me, I've already reached the seventh stage of grief acceptance.
Really?
Yeah, it's over. It's over for this year.
I mean, here's what I say. We always judge them against their own standard. But this year, the way the AFC is shaking out, what's going on, they might not have to be a classic Patriots team to limp their way to the AFC title game.
All right, Gasper's here. You want to talk to him? We've got a couple open phone lines here on an agenda-free Friday on Felger and Mass. 617-779-0985. Right to you next here on Felger and Mass.
Felger and Mass, the Sports Hub. Felger and Mass.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Brady with a play fake to Michelle. Bouncing left, sliding back left. Direct in traffic, a lot of time to launch a long hierarchy pass to the end zone. Caught by Gordon in the right side of the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots!
The New England Patriots knew every single week that Josh walked in that door and every single week that he was there with those walkthroughs and practices and meetings and was able to make it to the game, that was a victory. And they did everything they could to provide him with that support, to give him a good environment, that type of encouragement, to be there for him, to support him 100%. And so now it looks like it's just the cycle has sort of, you know, restarted again in terms of the problems that he's having. For Josh to deal with this now and take the step away, or is he going to get it? Is he going to get suspended? And I believe this time this would be a, you know, last chance type of thing. I don't know how far he is along with that third, fourth, fifth chance. Is it banishment from the league? I don't know what it is, but all I know is he put it together for as long as he could. You know, I was a fan of his this year. I love comeback stories, to see him in those moments like that with Tom and see him in that organization, because I know what it's like in that organization and the support that he was getting from Tom and those players and everyone being happy. And the fan base of New England, they embraced Josh in terms of what he was trying to do for the team and for his life. So this is a disappointment. I was a fan of Josh Gordon. I still am a fan for Josh Gordon, and I hope he gets his life right.
Former Patriot great Teddy Bruschi on Josh Gordon.
He has been suspended indefinitely by the NFL. Felger and Mazin, an agenda-free Friday. Murray and Jones in for the guys. And it's an agenda-free Friday brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges they don't. PlanetFitness.com. Got Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe alongside as well. And it's official with Josh Gordon off of the active roster. He has been replaced on the 53-man active roster as the Patriots have promoted defensive lineman Ufamba Kamalu to the 53-man roster. So there's your Josh Gordon replacement. Defensive lineman Ufamba Kamalu.
Nice.
Do we know what number he is in your playbook? And where he is in your hearts, Matt McCarthy?
Number one.
Google
in
it,
my
McCarthy.
Heart. Playbook, we'll find out.
Google it, McCarthy.
617-779-0985. Let's hear from you on basically anything. Josh Gordon, the Celtics, and their recent woes with this two-game losing streak. Bruins, whatever. Here on an agenda-free Friday. We'll go to Mike in Warwick on the Gordon story. Go ahead. You're next here on Felger and Mass.
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, listen, I called in on Monday, and I told you how I felt awful about this team this year. I feel worse, if that's possible. But, you know, I just think Gordon, he carved out a little niche for himself in that offense. You know, fairly limited passes, but 700 yards, you know, despite that. You know, and I still think, or at least hope, they're going to squeak out the division. But I think more than ever, it's one and done, especially if they have to go on the road. That's all I got, guys.
Thanks, Mike. So, Soucy said it. Bedard said it. Paul Perillo said it. We're getting a game on Sunday with this Bills team. Do you feel the same way?
I wouldn't be surprised, especially with Gordon out, because I was at that game in Buffalo, and Buffalo did a good job, and Gordon played that night, tamping down the Patriots' passing attack. The Bills are number one in the league in pass defense. They have a good defense, and Josh Allen is the type of quarterback who can run around and make some plays, and he's probably going to heave some 65-yard touchdown after he runs around back there. So I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up being in a game through three quarters. Then I think they'll pull away in the fourth.
Let's go to Hank in the car on the Patriots. Go ahead, Hank.
Yeah, I was going to talk about, you know, it doesn't really make sense with the NFL, the way they, you know, harsh down on, you know, marijuana usage. But, you know, these players go through, you know, time and time again, can hits on hits. You know, when MLB, I know some guys that play, and, you know, they're using it regularly. You know, they never get drug tested. You know, it doesn't make any sense, and you know, they go through half the damage.
You know, thanks for the call, Hank. I'm going to let you go because the assumption of weed is starting to bother me, and this isn't because I'm a medical marijuana card holder. It's just that why does everyone keep assuming weed?
Right.
Well, no matter what it is, it doesn't matter because he got popped again, and he knew what the rules were.
And he's had like five.
And
even
he's
if
had
it was
how
weed,
many chances?
He's had like five or six chances just with that. But yeah, we talked about this yesterday. I don't know how you feel about it, Chris,
sure.
But
yeah,
like,
Jones.
I don't. With everything that he's admitted to using, getting drunk before game, or at least drinking before games,
to warm his warm up the motor, I
like
think
just
is
what
he used.
Get the motor running.
Why do we assume it's that?
Well, here's the thing: his first suspension for the league in 2013, it wasn't for weed; it was for codeine. And he's admitted in the past, you know, abusing prescription drugs. He's had the alcohol thing. He admitted to using cocaine.
Right.
So everybody just says, oh, it's the old fusty NFL, which I agree with, the NFL being fusty about the medical marijuana thing.
Agreed.
Like, I think that's disgraceful. They should let the players do it. But, I mean, this is a guy, like, people try and minimize his substance abuse issues to, oh, he just likes to smoke weed and he's using it to be able to subdue the pain. By his own admission and stories he's had, he's abused a number of substances. It's not just marijuana that he's using.
Tom and Quincy on the Patriots and their wide receivers. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, Jim, I called in probably like 6 weeks ago, and me and you had the same mindset of what Cordarrelle Patterson brings to the game as far as passing game. He sucks in the passing game.
Yeah, I would generally agree, but at least you're getting effort out of him the last couple of weeks.
I know, but my fear now is that we're going to be force-fed Cordarrelle Patterson for the rest of the year, however this lasts, however long. They get in the playoffs, I don't think they're going to make it through all the way, but he's a gadget player, and they're forcing him in these roles, the things that he's not comfortable in, and it shows when they play. You know, they put him at fullback, for the love of God, a couple of weeks ago. I mean, he runs straight up. He can't catch. He falls over wide open in the flat. It's just, he doesn't. I mean, he's fast as hell, he's athletic, he's a crazy person, but you can't put him in these situations and expect, like, major production from the guy.
Yeah, but you can't expect that out of Hogan either. Like, Hogan's been put in plenty of positions. So, like, I don't love Cordarrelle Patterson as a player either, but
in his own words, he is a playmaker, Jones.
So. Yeah, I mean, he's made more plays than the other guys, so maybe he is the next guy who should get an opportunity. Like, I've kind of come around on that. I liked what he had against Pittsburgh in that game, even though they reversed the first down. I'd try more Cordarrelle Patterson. I don't think it's going to work, but that's what I would try.
Well, from a physical standpoint, right, he's probably the closest approximation you have to Gordon. So if you think about the way Gordon was used, the matchups you got there, who's the guy who's closest to that? In terms of size, speed, athleticism, it's Patterson.
Do you think that there's any chance? So this is what I'm fascinated to see with this team now that Gordon is gone. Do you think there's any chance that this maybe galvanizes the team? And because maybe some of these guys looked at him as a burden or someone in his way. Like, if you're Philip Dorsett, who's been essentially phased out of this offense over the last couple of months, now that he's gone, does he step up? Because, hey, I essentially, you know, got my job back.
It's possible. I mean, Dorsett got off to a good start, but remember, the reason Gordon was brought here in the first place was because when you looked at the Jacksonville and Detroit losses, Hogan and Dorsett couldn't get it done.
So what,
they just couldn't. They couldn't get open against the guys that they were going up against. They needed to be further down the depth chart and options. They needed a true outside threat, true, you know, number two type wide receiver. That's why they got Gordon in the first place. So I don't know how it would be different this time for those guys.
So we all look at it and we're like, Matt Dorsett, when he's been out there, he's produced. What does the coaching staff see different from us? Why doesn't the coaching staff like Dorsett as much as someone?
I don't know. It's funny you say they don't. I mean, they rave about the guy, and Bill did it again today. But every time they're asked about him, they rave about him.
But they don't give him snaps. So why? Yeah. So why? Why the disconnect?
I don't know what the disconnect is. They raved about him last year. They loved him last year. Bill today referenced, you know, how hard he works and how you can rely upon him, and said, "Look at the Super Bowl when we had to go to him." You know, I don't know what it. The only thing I can think of is that when you look at him, I think his yards per catch this year is like 9.6. He does have a little like Brandon Lloyd to him in this offense, where it's like
down.
He catches it and wherever he caught it, it's like a sniper just shot him, and he's down at that spot. Like, there's not a lot of yards after catch, run after catch, and maybe that's what it is, which is weird for a guy with that speed and athleticism. He can fly. He's a 4.3 guy coming out of Miami, but in this offense, he's weirdly and strangely kind of like a possession receiver.
Wake up over there, McCarthy. We got a baseball call coming in. Jeff in Connecticut. Hello, you're next. You're on Filger and Maz.
Hey, guys. Big fan. I've been trying to keep track of what Dombrowski has been saying about taking offers, open offers for JBJ and Xander Bogaerts. I saw they were trying to scout Tulowitzki, and they might be a player for Bryce Harper. What's the realistic expectation there?
Well, McCarthy, thanks for the call, Jeff. We get your input on this because, again, he hosts Hardcore Baseball. Check it out, 98.5thesportshub.com. He's one of the true seamheads we have in the station. It blows my mind that these big names are still out there. This sport can't get the hell out of its own way in terms of, like, what should be a massive offseason for them. Manny Machado and Bryce Harper still out there in the wind looking for a game.
Maybe Kimbrel will sign at some point. He's the top reliever on the market.
We'll get to
maybe
it. Get to it.
There is an update on that. Manny Machado, according to John Heyman, has told teams, the Yankees, the Phillies, and the White Sox, the three teams that are known to be in on him, he's not signing until after the new year.
Ugh. Nice.
Ugh. Really? Lord.
There you go.
The offseason takes too long. The game takes too long. And this comes from me, somebody who loves baseball more than just about anybody. Good Lord. Bryce Harper isn't coming here.
I didn't think so.
No way. No, the Red Sox, A, have a crowded outfield in the first place. They're not spending money. They're not going to spend money to retain half these guys anyway. They need to pay Mookie Betts. They're not getting Bryce Harper. No way.
Then looking at Troy Tulowitzki?
Well, he'd be a veteran minimum guy. So the Red Sox, again, I think with ownership telling them, you're not going to be able to spend a lot of money, Tulowitzki would be a depth guy, a veteran minimum guy. And, hey, listen, Dustin Pedroia, second base, could he play some second base? Maybe. If you keep Bogaerts, rumors about them shopping Bogaerts as well. So I think they're looking at Tulowitzki based on the cost and the high upside. I don't hate it. I like that.
For the night show, just from like a Jonesian takes perspective,
sure.
How do you want them to handle Jackie Bradley Jr.? Do you still want him here, or do you want him traded?
That's a good question, because what a day that would be for me the second he's traded. Like, just what a day.
Like, you get to crow for a few days, but then you lose so much content.
I do lose a lot of content. That's true. I'd always have Marcus Smart, though.
True.
So I think I'm rooting for the trade.
I was just going to say, it's so funny when you said that. I was like, you'd still have Marcus Smart. Like, you wouldn't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Smart's your guy.
Plus, I got McAvoy now. I got plenty to go after. It's fine.
All right, Chris, I want to see where you're at with this Celtics team, who I said should be embarrassed if they weren't on a 10-game winning streak by the time that they welcome in the Bucks.
I told you about tonight. The Pistons. I warned you about that game for weeks.
Yeah, the Pistons would have lost six straight when they lost that game. But how about that Suns loss the other night? Let's get your thoughts on that and what's going on with Al Horford, who I want a real diagnosis on. I'm slapping the table. I demand a real diagnosis on Al Horford, because it's not just tendonitis in the knee.
Okay, Felger.
He should be playing tonight against the Bucks. Celtics thoughts with Gaspert next here in an agenda-free Friday on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Devin Booker ends up having a pretty ordinary night. Funny. Big scoring nights, and the Suns lose to the Celtics. They let the huge lead slip away late in Phoenix, but tonight, just as they did to the Knicks in New York on Monday night, wrestled this game away from the Sixers in the middle of it, and this time they close the deal. The Celtics have to go small because of injuries, and they get crushed on the glass. And as a result, they are beaten at home for the first time in nearly a month. The final score, Phoenix 111, Boston 103.
I thought they were the faster, more physical team, you know, and losing Baines, obviously, and Morris affects that. But they've been that in their last week and a half. Like I said this before, and, you know, we talked about it, obviously, with our guys and everybody here. They're playing really good basketball, and they played a lot better than we did tonight. But physicality and turning us over were huge parts of that. I mean, I thought the rebounding, obviously, those extra possessions, and then the turnovers are killers.
So what do you think of that, Chris, the other night, Wednesday night at home? Celtics lose their second in a row, 111-103, to the Phoenix Suns. And it's not like your guy Devin Booker went off for 70 like he did a couple of years ago. I know you're a big fan of him.
Yeah,
DeAndre Ayton.
I was disappointed.
Great night on the glass. But that, to me, inexcusable. More than anything else, just to sum it up, the reason they shouldn't have lost that game, Chris, they hadn't played in like a week. I don't care about injuries. They're a better team than the Phoenix Suns. They can't lose a game like that, but here we are, and now we're questioning this team again, and whether we've maybe overrated them, maybe they don't play hard enough, especially on defense. Their shots don't fall, especially, you know, the perimeter defense goes wayward. The only guys you really see try night in, night out, Morris, well, both Marcuses, Smart, Morris, and Kyrie. The rest of them, not so much. Where are you at with this team?
You know, I'm not panicking over this. You know, just like I think some people overreacted to the 8-game winning streak, and they were like, okay, it's done, it's fixed, you know, it's all fixed. It's like, no, they found some roles, which is good, and more consistency, but they still have to work it out a little bit. I'm not going to panic over losing the two games. I thought that Pistons game was a little bit of an ambush game for the Celtics to begin with, and Phoenix was playing well, and they were, you know, depleted, and when I look at it, I'm not going to panic. Now, if I'm somebody like Jaylen Brown, I'm embarrassed by that game. One rebound? One? Come on. Like, you got to do better than that. And that's one thing I question sometimes with the Celtics team, is there a little bit of a sense of entitlement? Like, did they get that from the 8-game winning streak? Did they start to think the way that some people here were thinking, which is like, oh, we flipped the switch. We figured it out. We're good. Now these teams are just going to, you know, lay down for us. And you see what it's like when you subtract a guy like Marcus Morris, who's been such a huge part of the turnaround. They need that edge, that grit that they get from Morris and Smart, because I think other times, when those guys aren't in there and it's not there, I think that this is a team that can get a little bit daunted and a little bit complacent.
Where do you think that comes from?
I think that it comes from the fact that so many of these guys tie their performance and their emotional level to their offense.
Oh, I agree with that completely.
And I think when you look at Marcus Smart, he's a guy that can affect the game in other ways. He doesn't have to be scoring points to have an effect on the game. Marcus Morris obviously knows his role. He's been great this year.
Tatum's one of the biggest defenders of this.
Yes. Yeah. It's like everything's about the offense. And if they're rolling offensively, they're feeling good. There's more effort there. But if they're not rolling offensively, it seems like there's a general malaise and it just affects, you know, what's happening with said player, whether it's Brown or Hayward or Tatum.
Do you think something more is going on with Al Horford now? This is going to be his seventh game he's going to miss with knee tendonitis, and I'm using air quotes there. That's more for the...
Well, you know, the Celtics have such a great history when it comes to telling us the truth on big man injuries, whether it be Shaquille O'Neal or Jermaine O'Neal or, you know, Kevin Garnett. They're always so honest and accurate with these injuries. Or Perk, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, how can you possibly question this? I'm sure it's nothing.
I think tonight is proof that there's, you know, something else going on here or something worse with that knee, because you have the Bucks coming in. And no, it's must wins too dramatic, but you know, it's an important game. They've been better than you. This is real competition in the East. Morris has already been ruled out. If it's just knee tendonitis, well, why the hell aren't you playing in this game when you haven't played in the last six?
Yeah, it is a little disconcerting. And I know they're taking the long view here, but again, like I just said, like their history is not that they're always like super forthright with what's really going on with the injuries, particularly with the bigs. So it is disconcerting when you look at it, especially if you have Baines out 4 to 6 weeks. You would think, as you said, Jim, that, you know, if it's just tendonitis, even if it's, okay, he's going to play in this game against the Bucks, and then he's going to be off, you know, that's fine. I mean, if you want to do it that way, that's fine. The fact they're not playing him in the game at all, it sort of tells you that maybe this is a little more serious than they're letting on, or that they think there's the possibility that this could be more serious than they're letting on.
Do you take the Bucks seriously, like as a title contender?
Yeah, I do.
Do you?
I mean, the Celtics barely got out of that series last year, and I know Irving and no Hayward.
I don't really even mean compared to how Boston's playing. I mean in the grand scheme hierarchy of the NBA. Do you look at the East as kind of Toronto and everyone else, or is Milwaukee in that group?
No, I think Milwaukee's in that group. Okay. I totally think Milwaukee, especially now that they added George Hill to that roster. They have a little bit more depth. I thought that was one of their issues, you know, last year. And the way that Giannis is playing, now I think it's always a little bit you know, tricky to rely on a guy like Eric Bledsoe. I think we saw
they don't have enough star power, I feel like. Although I guess Toronto doesn't have a ton of star power beyond Kawhi. Lowry's not the same player he's been. He's been hurt, but they don't feel like some of those teams, even in the East, which has been watered down, like the LeBron teams that we've seen the past, you know, however many years now.
Celtics and Bucks, you can catch it here tonight, 98.5 Sports Hub. Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell have a call starting at 7:30 here on 98.5 the Sports Hub. Josh in Webster, you know, in the 80s, that would have been kind of kinky. You're next here on Felger and Maz on an agenda-free Friday. Hello, Josh.
Hey, what's up, guys? My point kind of fits into what you're talking about. I'm just wondering, like, if all this resting of players and, like, letting them come back from injuries, I wonder if, like, the Celtics have 2016 Belichick syndrome and think they can win anywhere in the playoffs.
Oh, I'm sorry. How much of this do you think is reading their own press clippings, Chris? And we've talked about this on the Celtics show, but it doesn't. I said it the other day, you know, and I've said it before with you on our show. I've given the formal apology to the Bridgies, who I ragged on incessantly, and I was way too hard on. But at least you got max effort from that team, night in, night out. The Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder Celtics, like, you got max effort from that team on a nightly basis. This group?
Yeah, but those guys were all hardwired for that because they had something to prove. They had a chip on their shoulder. People had said, you're not even good enough to be in the league. Look at what they're dealing with now. Like, Gordon Hayward, premium free agent, all-star, was the guy in Utah. Kyrie Irving, basically his own brand, has a championship hit, one of the biggest shots in the history of the NBA Finals. Two top five picks, two number three overall picks in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
McDonald's All-America.
Yeah.
Like, Tatum, like, number one recruit in the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just, I mean, they don't have the same type of, you know, even somebody like Rozier, I think, sort of looks at it and is like, well, hey, you know, I'm Scary Terry. You saw what I did last year in the playoffs. Like, I should be a starter. Look, when he was on Pitino's podcast, he said, I don't really see myself as a sixth man.
Yeah, yeah.
So all these guys sort of feel like they've arrived and they're of a certain pedigree, whereas the other guys they had were guys who had to scratch and claw just to have roles in the NBA, and that's why you got it from them every night. They didn't know any other way.
Derek in Foxborough on the Celtics. Go ahead. You're next year on Felger and Maz.
Yeah, I just had two quick questions on the Celtics. What do you think they're going to do with all these draft picks they have? They have the Kings pick, the Memphis pick, the Clippers pick. Do you think that's enough to get Anthony Davis?
No.
And in the offseason, Marcus Morris and Terry Rozier are both free agents. Who would you prioritize keeping over those two? Because I would keep Morris.
I would, too, just in terms of...
Oh, he's going to get paid. He's gone.
Yeah, I know. I don't think they'll do it here, but... I mean, he's been the most consistent player on this team offensively this whole year. Last couple of weeks looked like an all-star, got neutralized in Detroit. But I wonder how much of that is maybe a contract push, too. So there's some risk there in terms of, you know, the age of that dude. And
But I also think he's going to want a team where he's going to have a, you know, look,
a
he's in the starting lineup. Yeah. I mean, he's in the starting lineup now, but where he's going to have a bigger role, I think, ultimately, and more guarantee of offensive opportunity. I think, you know, he's a short timer here. I'd be stunned if he came back. Especially with the again, if they're going to have four draft picks, I don't see how you make it work.
And just real quick, you think those draft picks are basically worthless, right?
Well, let's see what happens with Sacramento. I know you're big on them. Mm-hmm. They're both Sacramento and Memphis right now are below the playoff line, just below.
But they're both over 500.
They're both over 500, correct. 16 and 50, but they're both below the playoff line. Let's see where those picks land. I've thought for a while that the Clippers pick is worthless. Because it's lottery protected. The only way you get it is if it's out of the lottery. So I would deal that pick if I were them. And then let's see where their own pick lands.
617-779-0985. Two open phone lines. You want to join us here in an agenda-free Friday on Felger and Maz with Chris Gasper. You want to talk to him? We have one more segment to go. Coming up next in our long commercial-free segment.
This is Felger and Maz
on 98.5
The Sports Hub.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Maz, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Murray and Jones in for the guys for the final time this week. Got Matt McCarthy in my normal spot. And it's our final segment with Chris Gasper of the Boston Globe. You want to talk to him? 617-779-0985. We're just talking about the Celtics, this current two-game losing streak. Hopefully they can turn things around with their game against the Bucks tonight. But this question's come up a couple of times over the last few days there, Chris. Sean and Worcester, go ahead. Sean?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hey, Sean.
I appreciate the speculation. I love hearing from you, Chris. You guys do such a great job, and I love the two of you together on weekdays, even Saturdays. But I just can't help but feel like, you know, Brad Stevens needs to take some responsibility for the inconsistency of this team. What would Greg Popovich do with this team? Or Dwayne Casey or a Spoelstra? I mean, I just feel like there's just an inordinate amount of talent here. Like, what's the problem, and why isn't anybody pointing the finger at him?
Yeah, I mean, I think on the Celtics show, I've pointed the finger at Brad a little bit. This is uncharted territory for Brad, too. Everything I said about the Bridges that you mentioned, these guys that, you know, those are the guys Brad was coaching, guys who were self-motivated, who had something to prove, who were scratching and clawing for playing time.
Those minds were malleable.
Yeah, this is a little different for Brad. And we said this at the outset of the season. I absolutely think Brad has some culpability in the team's play, particularly the 10-10 start. I've said this before. I'll say it again. I think there's a fine line between obstinance and patience. I think he stuck with that starting lineup too long. You saw what happened when he put the Marcuses in and he moved Hayward to the bench. I've also said that I think with Hayward at the beginning, you know, they were going off reputation and his relationship with Hayward that Brad had from Butler, and it was a little bit of Little League dad, like Little Gordy's gonna start no matter what, because, you know, Little Gordy's my guy. That's what it felt like. So yeah, Brad has some culpability in the whole thing. It's an adjustment for him as well, and I expect him to eventually make that adjustment. I think he's already taken some strides towards that.
I don't know if you might have heard this yesterday. Jones was wondering, when can we start actually getting on Gordon Hayward for his inconsistent play with the injury? And I decided, you know what? Christmas, because typically, to me as an NBA
fan, that's the Christmas spirit.
That's when the season truly starts. Christmas Day, that slate of really
good
games.
Hey, it's Christmas, Gordon. You suck.
Here's your gift. Stop using the injury as an excuse. So, but he wants to get on him now.
I think 40 games. If you're halfway through and it's still going on, I think.
I was looking up some of the numbers yesterday just of what...
Oh, and Paul George, right?
Yeah, how long it took Paul George to come back.
Yeah.
And in fairness, Paul George returned later on that... Because George injured it in the summer.
Right. Yeah, USA Basketball.
Whereas Gordon Hayward did it in game one, as we all know, of last season. But, you know, Paul George returned for 6 games, didn't do much in those 6 games at the end of the year. But the following year, and I'll get it now... It was like by the second month of the season, Paul George was tearing it up. In 15-16, I think he averaged like 30 points a game in the month of December. Averaged 30 points a game in the month of November, excuse me. It was 29.5 points a game in November of that year. So, and for the year, he averaged 23 a game. Now, look, I'm sure the usage was higher, and he was getting more looks, and he wasn't coming off the bench like Gordon Hayward
was. He's 6'10", which, you know, that helps.
And Paul George didn't have a secondary surgery that set him back a little bit.
Okay, but still, so fine. So he can be a little further behind Paul George's schedule. He's nowhere near what Paul George was doing at that. Like, not even close.
Wait, what? Jimmy, did I miss something?
No, Gordon Hayward did. Gordon Hayward had the surgery, the procedure last year.
Yeah, they had to remove, what was it, a piece of hardware, right?
Right.
Yeah. Him and Kyrie both had, like, cleanup procedures or something. Or Kyrie had the cleanup procedure and they just shut Hayward down when he was coming back. I forget.
No, Hayward had another procedure.
So there you go.
Yeah, Jimmy's right on in that. Yeah, I would say, look, I think you got to give him 40 games. Maybe I'm being generous, but that's, I expect by like game 41 or 42, he should be the real Gordon Hayward.
Mark in Providence on Gordon Hayward. Go ahead. You're next here on an Agenda-Free Friday on Felger and Mass.
Hey, guys. I think Gordon Hayward's been overrated from day one. I mean, his career starts a 15 points and 3 assists a game, and not the guy who was playing 32-plus minutes a lot of times, 38 minutes a game. So, so if this injury has carved, say, 3 points off his game, I mean, he's a bench guy now. I mean, he was never a big three piece, in my opinion. I think he's overrated.
Oh, he was. No, you're underrating him. I mean, he dragged a Utah Jazz team to the playoffs in the West, you know, when the West was good, way better than the East, and got him into the second round. Now, they ran into the buzzsaw that is the Golden State Warriors, but he dragged that team into the playoffs. You're underselling, you know, Gordon Hayward if you're saying he's the type of player that he just described him as.
All I would point out with Gordon Hayward, Butler didn't miss him. You know, he left Butler and they got back to the national title game after playing in the national title game.
That was the genius of Brad.
Well, true, fine, good, yeah. Good job by Brad.
Yeah,
I don't think the Jazz missed him last year.
That's when the genius of Quinn Snyder, who Brad really respects.
They got to the same place in the postseason, and it didn't feel like the Celtics missed him all that much last year when he went down. So that's the only thing I would point out about Gordon Hayward.
That's the genius of Micah Shrewsbury, assistant coach to Brad.
Three teams that don't miss Gordon Hayward. In fact, they're worse with Gordon Hayward this year. That's all. Those are just facts.
And, wow. and to put a bow on it, now Jones is going to strike you down by shooting you with electricity out of his fingers. Good.
Only now.
Have you seen my powers, Gasper? Nah.
That was pretty good. I was hoping for a true Jonesian take, man, and I got one. So Jim, I'm just curious. You know, there's a lot going on. McCarthy has all the, he's in these crazy baseball takes. Like, why isn't there an off-season baseball reporters?
I don't know. I'm glad that there isn't. In fact,
I felt like there was.
It seems like a good night for that.
Well, let's not put more on my plate. Again, as I said at 2 o'clock.
Hey, Gasper, you do the baseball reporters off season on your own time.
As I said at 2 o'clock today, this is a true agenda free, like the most agenda free Friday, because at 2:01, I started looking at that clock saying, please say six. Please say six.
When are we getting calls for Big Jim life advice? We still
I thought we were going to do five questions not about sports with Gasper today.
That would have been good, because we probably don't have time tomorrow.
Yeah, we don't have time to do it tomorrow because we have an abbreviated show. What with the
But unfortunately, the real mastermind behind the five questions is not present in the building. That's the problem.
Right, Tracy Clements is not.
You have somebody who writes stuff for you?
Yeah, Tracy helps out on that. See, now Chris has exposed my laziness. Merry Christmas, Jim. I'm going to expose you as a fraud.
Well, I thought that was just like a Hack Nessen reporter or something. You're not write stuff for him.
You're not lazy at all. You're going from this work event to another work event tonight. You, Troy McClure, Rainier Wolfcastle, all going to be there.
Yes, at Finn McCool's for National Ugly Holiday Sweater Day. Yes, yep. It's the new fake holiday, in case you've seen that hashtag. Anyway.
Lenny and Carl will be there, too.
It's why Jones and I, this is for the TV audience on NBC Sports Boston, we're wearing these Ugly Miller Lite holiday sweaters. So if you want to win one of these, yes, come to Finn McCool's, as Chris said during the commercial break, which sounds like a Simpsons bar. But yes, it's a real place on High Street, I believe, in Boston, so I'll be there from 7 to 9, so come join me, won't you? Chris, see you tomorrow morning on
sounds
the award-winning
good,
Gasper and Murray at 11 a.m. here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And that's going to do it here for Chris. Make sure you read him at the Boston Globe. Check us out tomorrow morning here on the Sports Hub. It is an agenda-free Friday. We will continue with your phone calls at 617-779-0985. Of course, agenda-free Friday brought to you by the good people at Planet Fitness. The world judges. They don't. PlanetFitness.com. Matt McCarthy going to get you caught up with the Sports Hub headlines. 90 seconds there, and then right to you and your calls here on agenda-free Friday on Felger and Mass.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.